Ruin. Type, projectile. Cost, 40 MP. Range, 25 meters. Effects. Launches a volatile bolt of darkness in a specific direction. The force of the spell will attempt to pull apart the first solid thing it hits, then dissipate. Grows in power in dark places or at night, dealing up to 50% more damage depending on the environment. Unsurprisingly, there was no new information here. All of this knowledge had already been transmitted to the mimic's mind and engraved into its memory. In a hypothetical situation where it could communicate with others, it would be able to accurately describe the spell as a projectile from the ruined school of magic that grew stronger in the dark. The problem was that it would then be unable to answer the obvious follow-up question. What the crap was ruin? Ruin. An offense-focused school of magic that boasts the strongest destructive power, commonly known as black magic. Ruin spells are unbalanced and inefficient, making them cost more MP than spells from other schools. And now it could say that ruin spells hurt a lot, but demand high MP to use. Was it really that high, though? Compared to the staggering 150 MP cost of cadaver absorption, 40 almost seemed like a joke. The question was, exactly how powerful was this strongest destructive power? The mimic only had enough MP on it for, like, 3 casts of that spell. Or was it 4? Wait, how much max MP did it have again? It brought up the status screen to double-check. It had 52 out of 195 MP, so that was 2, 3, 4... just short of 5 Shadow Bolts worth of MP. It could probably do 5 in a row if it waited a bit for its MP to recover between casts. Oh. It checked again. 53 out of 195 MP. Plus 0.4 per second. Now that the mimic had a closer look, didn't it have 20-something when it first got this warlock job? And didn't it try to use this Shadow Bolt spell almost immediately afterwards? It knew the cost was 40 MP, but it didn't really think to check how much it had at the time. It was simply overexcited at the prospect of gaining a reusable ranged attack. It had given up after several tries and had been poring over its menus ever since. So, now would be a good time to try again, yes? The monster switched gears and sharpened its focus. It let out a quiet guttural sound that was, in essence, the Shadow Bolt chant in Mimicanese. It pictured gathering the shadows around it into a small, dense lump while doing so. A 15-centimeter-wide black mass formed steadily in front of it. A thick miasma poured out of it in all directions. The dark, smog-like substance lingered in the air for a brief moment before dissipating into nothing. After about a second of that, it shouted, "Shadow Halt!" while simultaneously imagining the conjured chunk of darkness flying off into a specific direction. And that was indeed what happened. The Shadow Bolt flew in a perfectly straight line into the distance with a small hissing noise. It reached its maximum range of 25 meters in just under a second before fizzling out of existence. The mimic had just used its first real spell. It did another dance for joy. Like this, it would finally be able to fight at range and also increase its warlock job levels. Any experience points, or XP, earned through killing things would, by default, feed into the monster's main job, that of a level 15 mimic. For it to raise its level 1 side job, it had to murder stuff by doing warlocky type things. Like, for example, hurl lumps of eldritch darkness at its prey. If it just continued stabbing and biting everything to death, the creature's fancy new job would remain as little more than a level 1 decoration. This was the gist of the knowledge it had gleaned from its brief struggle to find out why its Shadow Bolt spell failed to activate. Most of that information was given to it freely after it inspected the terms job, main job, side job, and job level. It also realized that it would need to split XP between the mimic and warlock jobs, but that was not necessarily a bad thing. Those rapid level-ups were sure to be tasty in their own way. Additionally, as a shapeshifter, it fully understood the benefits of being versatile, so having a means of attacking at range was going to be a huge help. Although it then immediately realized something. The shapeshift skill was, in a way, this monster's main weapon. The legs, tentacle tongues, and even that one eye it sprouted were all possible because of this skill. but at the same time, it had somehow ended up neglecting it. Until now, it couldn't really morph itself while waiting in ambush. Nobody in their right mind would assume a wiggling chest was the real thing, after all. That much it already knew by instinct. But now was different. Now it would be taking a more active role that went against such gut feelings. As a matter of fact, those very same instincts had steadily been getting quieter, even before its connection to the dungeon had been severed. If at first they were like a loud, ear-piercing scream, right now they were closer to a murmur. It knew what they were telling it, but it could easily ignore them if it wished to do so. It wasn't actually a slave to such things. It didn't necessarily have to obey them. It was odd that it took it this long to realize that simple fact. This was probably due to the dungeon's compulsions anyway. There really wasn't much point in worrying about it now. Besides, its natural urges appealed to it at a base level, so it would still end up indulging them every now and then. The difference was it could now make the choice whether it would do that or not. And right now, it was making the decision to improve itself. Outside of this dungeon was the complete unknown, and it needed to be ready. Therefore, it would need to train up its shapeshift skill so that it would be better prepared. After all, the speed and range of transformations it could do went up noticeably every time the skill leveled up. For starters, now that it had sight, how about increasing its field of vision? While not as accurate as its magical perception, it was still wary of being ambushed from a distance. Those humans with their front-facing eyes were clearly idiots. If they could see towards their backs and sides without turning their heads, they might not be such easy prey. Such pitiful creatures. Over the next several seconds, about 20 additional closed eyelids grew from the monster's wood-like shell. It needed that many to cover all possible angles it could think of, after all. Even if a few of them were redundant, it was good to have backups. When the eyelids were properly formed, it began working on the hollow eyeballs under them. Since it had already figured out the proper structure, it just needed to repeat it over and over. Proficiency level increased. Shapeshift is now level 4. Agility plus 1. Dexterity plus 1. Endurance plus 2. As expected, shapeshift went up. It seemed that it would grow faster from massive changes rather than small, delicate ones. The mimic gained quite a bit of it while it was figuring out how to make its new legs work. Growing them just right demanded it shift a lot of its biomass around, after all. And just now it was recreating a considerable number of delicate organs on its surface. Still, the proficiency didn't seem to climb as rapidly as it did while the monster was creating its first eyeball. Its leg and tongue manipulation had practically stopped increasing its proficiency altogether. Ultimately, it seemed that it would have to create new and unique things from its malleable flesh if it wanted to reach the pinnacle of shapeshifting. But that would come later. Right now, it had finished growing its new eyes, and it opened them all at once. Your mind has been overwhelmed. HP minus 10. You are stunned for 5 seconds. And immediately fell on its underside. Its legs sprawled out from under it like someone had squashed it with an oversized fly swatter. Its eyelids drooped over its eyes while the magical perception was cut off. It was now in a world of complete darkness. It was unconscious. Simply put, its fragile mind was completely unprepared for the sudden influx of information. A total of 21 eyes plus the monster's magical perception overloaded what passed for its brain. It was so harsh that it actually felt physical pain as its HP took a small hit. Even though the surroundings were almost completely pitch black to the imitation human eyes, it still proved entirely too much. You are no longer stunned. After snapping back to reality, it reflexively fluttered open its eyes. Not the wisest of decisions. Your mind has been overwhelmed. HP minus 10. You are stunned for 5 seconds. A special action has been performed. Mental fortitude plus 1. It was so intense that its own body recognized it as a mental attack from the environment. And because its mental fortitude attribute was still low, it was completely under the influence of the stunned abnormal condition. If its mental fortitude were high enough, it would be able to at least remain in a groggy, dazed state rather than completely blacking out. Although that also meant that it would be trying to process 21 eyes worth of visual information while it was stunned. Whether it was able to close them under such conditions was another question entirely. The worst-case scenario would be it becoming a prisoner in its own body. Its own perception would be overloading its brain while it could not cut off the feed. What passed for its brain would then probably leak out of its gaping mouth as it quietly passed away. You are no longer stunned. And again, its eyes opened up before its consciousness could stop them. Your mind has been overwhelmed. HP minus 10. You are stunned for 5 seconds. It wasn't until the loop repeated itself several more times and earned it another point of mental fortitude that the mimic was finally able to keep its eyes shut after waking up. Reeling from the intense something ache, it quickly retracted all the extra eyes back inside its body. It was now back to having a singular ocular organ in the middle of its front side, just under its gaping maw. If it were an actual chest, that's probably where its lock would be. Overdoing it with the shape-shifting was clearly a bad idea. The mimic had gotten full of itself and suffered for its stupidity. No matter how plain a creature was, it would quickly learn from such an ordeal. Painful things were painful, after all. It would try to take things slower for the moment. Something simpler, like slightly morphing its appearance as it walked around. But how much would it need to do for it to be enough to train its shapeshift skill? It wasn't quite sure what counted as shapeshifting and what counted as moving its body, at least not until it tried things out for itself. And so, after considering its options, the monster went to work. The treasure chest stood up on its spider legs like it was the most natural thing in the world. Its faux wood shell began rippling and shivering slightly, almost like the surface of a puddle being disturbed by a harsh wind. It wasn't morphing into anything in particular. It just twisted its flesh around a little. After keeping an eye on its status screen and confirming the desired skill proficiency did indeed go up by 1%, it was satisfied. This ought to be enough to casually raise the shapeshift skill as time went on, right? Yep, sure looked that way. Then, while maintaining this state, it took a confident step forward towards the future. You have suffered minor blunt trauma, HP minus 2, which, as it would appear, was the floor. It had stumbled and face-planted into the stone ground. Shapeshifting actually took quite a bit of focus. Such a thing as casually morphing its flesh simply wasn't possible. It had to make a conscious effort into restructuring its own body, after all. It also disturbed its center of gravity, meaning it had even more trouble keeping balance on those 6 thin legs it had. Even if it could walk, it's not like that was an automatic process that happened on its own, either. After all, it had these legs for less than a day. The fact it could actually run and fight like that was in itself impressive. It wouldn't be possible if it wasn't precisely mimicking an actual spider's actions, but in the end it was just imitating something else. It's not like it had mastered these movements quite yet. As a result, it hit the limit on its concentration and fucked up its gait. It simply did not have the capacity to shapeshift and walk at the same time. So would it stay put and train, or head out? Frankly speaking, it had very little desire to linger here. It felt somewhat scornful at having been almost literally chased out by its own parent. Not to mention the prey here were clearly unable to help it grow its job levels further. It was also slightly worried about those 5 identically dressed people it murdered. Everyone else it had killed, while looking similar, was still unique in some way. But that bunch felt different, like they belonged to something bigger. Oddly enough, they reminded the mimic of the dungeon's giant bats. That particular breed of monster had a habit of fighting in groups. If too many of its kind were killed, the survivors would focus on escaping from battle. But rather than a surrender, this was more of a tactical retreat. They wouldn't forgive anyone who dared to slay their kin, so if they got away, they would come back minutes later with an entire flock of their friends. It was something the mimic had witnessed a few times as adventurers ran past it while being chased by dozens of the flying rodents. Since they were already in full sprint, the mimic had to regrettably let them pass through its lair. It couldn't keep up with humans that ran with all their might. If they didn't approach it or linger around its spot, it had no chance of getting close enough to ambush them. And those panicked individuals certainly did none of those things. After all, What sort of idiot would stop to check a treasure chest when he was about to be overwhelmed by large numbers like that? But still, it was a scenario that was entirely possible with those shiny people. Even if none of them escaped, it was likely that their friends would come looking for them. Therefore, the mimic would need to swiftly and surely evacuate before it was hunted down and killed. Picking itself up off the ground, it scanned the distance with its one eye. It spotted the slightly lit opening that its recent quartet of victims had come from and headed off towards it. The draft it had felt earlier became more and more noticeable as it closed in on that exit. You have left the Lidogar dungeon complex. Somewhere along the way, it was told it had officially left the dungeon once again. Not like it cared anymore at this point. Dismissing the message, it approached the narrow hole in the otherwise vast cavern. A silvery light poured in from the 2-meter-tall and 3-meter-wide passage. The mimic screwed up its courage and passed through the threshold, setting foot into the wide-open world for the first time. And it saw many strange things. The first new sight the mimic beheld was grass. Green blades of fiber that swayed gently in the breeze. They glistened with moisture as the air shoved them around for no particular reason. They looked soft and might be pleasant to sit on, unlike that hard stone floor it was used to. Next, it saw trees. It somehow recognized them as being made of wood. After all, it was the very material it was imitating. Not to mention, its teeth had crunched plenty of wooden staves and bows into splinters. Unlike steel, they weren't hard enough to pierce the insides of its maw, so it had no trouble gobbling them up. It wasn't a particularly tasty or nourishing material, though. It just ate them to get rid of them, so it had no desire to chomp into those bland tree trunks. Those colorful bits on top of them were another story. They looked like they might taste good. And as its gaze went up the tree, it finally beheld the night sky. It stared blankly at the black void that seemed to stretch out into infinity. Countless stars sparkled and twinkled from far, far away. The unobstructed view of a star-filled night sky was a romantic, almost sacred thing. It was, in some ways, a shame that the denizens of this world did not take time out of their daily lives to stop and appreciate its natural beauty. Tonight was even a rare occasion when all of its moons were visible at the same time. The three celestial bodies that passed each other idly by as they hurtled through space. Their combined silver glow bathed the surroundings in an almost eerie light. The mysteries of the cosmos seemed to spread out before the mimic and its one lonely eye. And all it could think about was how come it was so damn bright in this new cave it had found. Part 3. The Janther was a fearsome creature. At first look, it appeared to be a big cat. Its head had typical features one would expect to see in something like a mountain lion. Whiskers, perky ears, pointed teeth, elongated face, soft fur, and keen eyes. Its torso, too, was pretty much the same in structure, even if a bit longer than one might expect. It also had a soft-looking tail which it used to adjust its balance when running or falling. That was, however, where the similarities ended. For one thing, its fur was dark green, bordering on black. It also grew to sizes impossible for a normal animal, easily reaching up to 4 meters in length from head to rump and about 150 centimeters in height. Its most telling feature, however, was the extra pair of legs growing out right behind the frontmost ones. If it reared up on its hind paws, it would almost look like a two-legged, four-armed creature. And every heavily muscled appendage was tipped with razor-sharp claws capable of shredding people into ribbons. It made its home in thick forests, where it could prowl and look for prey undisturbed. Hovering around level 30 during adulthood, these big cats usually dominated the local food chain. They were also highly territorial and competitive with their own kind. A Janther encroaching on another's turf was no different than a declaration of war. It wouldn't be wrong to say that each of these individuals ruled over their domain like kings or queens. These majestic beasts were, without question, apex predators. They had an aura of undeniable strength about them, a sort of almost regal bearing befitting a powerful ruler. It was something a certain treasure chest was just now made aware of as it desperately tried to conceal its presence. While exploring this new cave called the Wide World, the first living being it found was a Janther. It beheld its form relaxing in a particularly old and thick tree. The green fur blended in perfectly with the tree's foliage, making it impossible to see with the naked human eye, which was what this particular shapeshifter was using to look around. It therefore failed to notice the huge Janther ahead of time. When it walked within about 10 meters of the fearsome creature, the mimic finally detected it with its magical perception. The recently quiet instincts then screamed at it with all their might. "Hide!" they shouted. "Hide if you want to live, retard!" And so it did. It immediately undid all of its mutations and once again became a perfectly unassuming chest while activating its stealth skill. This was a good call, because Janther whiskers were very sensitive towards mana. So something like its mystical perception, which was essentially a kind of magical sonar, made them react. The sleeping Janther woke up immediately when it felt the odd disturbance, after which it heard a soft impact of something hitting the grassy ground. In its haste, the mimic had retracted its feet so quickly that its rectangular body fell to the ground with a soft thud. It had no choice in the matter. If the shapeshifter was any slower, its true identity would have been revealed immediately. Instead, all the Janther saw when it looked down from its perch was a perfectly normal wooden treasure chest. A rectangular pile of wood with steel edges which had appeared out of nowhere in the middle of a forest. This was not, in fact, as normal as the mimic thought it was. How could it possibly know that chests did not exist in the wilderness? Still, even if it realized it now, it was far too late. The huge cat had leaped down from its perch and was currently sniffing at the chest. That faint presence it felt just a moment ago disappeared almost completely, but it was still definitely there. As expected, something about this box unsettled it, but the beast had trouble figuring out what it was. That resulted in a sort of stalemate between the two. A stalemate of ignorance, that is. The mimic kept observing the huge predator with its magical perception, unaware that its gaze was the reason for its current predicament. The Janther, on the other hand, wasn't sure what this odd tingling in its whiskers was. The only reason it took interest in this strange pile of wood was that, quite simply, it was curious. And while the saying that curiosity killed the cat seemed like it might become reality, there was simply no way that would happen. The mimic, objectively speaking, had no chance of victory here. The Janther before it had a staggering 534 HP and more than double the mimic's strength and agility. It was much tougher, stronger, and faster. Unlike the all-rounder mimic job, the specialized big cat job focused only on physical attributes. Because of that, even if the two were on equal footing, the Janther would still win in a straight fight. It was a species well suited to combat, unlike its theoretical opponent. On the other hand, if the mimic had managed to land a surprise attack, it would have a decent chance of taking down the bigger creature. But all that was a what-if scenario. The what-is scenario was one where the Janther would have an overwhelming victory no matter what the box did. The gap in levels was simply too high. And while strategy and experience might have been able to compensate for that, the mimic had neither of those things right now. At least, nothing it could use against a creature it had just seen for the first time. So what would this self-proclaimed king do when it found a suspicious object in its territory? Why? Claim it as its own, of course. Whatever this thing was, it was clearly inside its domain. Yet it smelled like it belonged to someone else. In actuality, that smell was what bothered the six-legged monster the most. So, after turning its body to the side and urinating on top of the weird pile of lumber, it went up its tree and drifted off to sleep. Even if its whiskers were still tingling slightly, it wasn't at a level where it couldn't be ignored. The slightly foreign sensation may have woken it up since it was a light sleeper, but it was now used to it. The freshly marked mimic was not, as one might expect, outraged. It wasn't feeling humiliated, nor was its pride crushed. The simple creature didn't have things like pride, humility, or shame to begin with. So what if it was covered in cat piss? Right now, it was simply glad to be alive. The big scary fuzzy thing had gone back to where it came from and the immediate danger had passed. But the crisis was far from over. Even the slightest movement on the mimic's part was sure to wake the big scary thing up again. Therefore, the faux chest focused its entire being on chesting. It would be the chestiest chest that ever chested. And so it waited. Again. It wouldn't need to wait as long as it did last time, though. It just had to lay low until the six-legged green thing went away. Eventually the sun rose. As the mimic felt the celestial body's warm light for the first time in its cave-bound life, it had absolutely nothing to say about the matter. Chests didn't speak, after all. It did quietly ponder just what was causing it, though. Several hours after sunrise, the Janther finally woke up. It yawned and stretched a bit, then just sort of lazed around its tree. It was, after all, a nocturnal creature. It wouldn't leave to hunt until early evening and would sit idly while scratching its ass until then. Truly an attitude befitting of a king. But before any of that could happen, at some point in the early afternoon, the Janther suddenly leaped down from its tree. It let out a low growl from its throat while it scanned its surroundings. The mimic briefly wondered what caused this sudden behavior. It could have such idle thoughts since it didn't seem to be the focus of the beast's attention this time around. And, a few seconds later, it got its answer. An arrow flew out from a nearby bush. It cut through the air at high speed, aimed squarely at the Janther's eye. Its target dodged out of the way with a grace and speed that belied the size and weight of its body. The errant projectile flew over the mimic and stuck itself in the wide tree trunk. The Janther roared loudly, as if demanding whoever had the nerve to shoot at it to show themselves. What it got in response was another arrow. Then another one. And another one. The gigantic mass of muscle and fur dodged them nimbly every time, but refused to fall for the obvious provocations. Its keen sense of smell already told it there were multiple people waiting to ambush it on the other side of that foliage. Once they realized their trap wouldn't work, the would-be assassins showed themselves. The first ones to run out of the bush were two men. Their matching longswords, kite shields, and half-plate armor all looked well used, but in good condition. Behind them was a pointy-eared elf wearing a green robe modeled to look like a one-piece dress, and she was carrying a thick oaken staff. The last one to show themselves was another elf, only this one was male and held an intricately decorated longbow and was clad in a tunic and trousers made out of brown leather. The four-man adventuring party's target was, without question, the Janther. These mighty beasts were a highly profitable source of income. The eyeballs, brain, sharp teeth, liver, and several other of its parts were useful to alchemists and enchanters, but the pelt was the most valuable of them all. They all fetched a good price because it was a rare monster that not everyone living in these parts could take down. In addition to all that, this particular beast was already responsible for attacking several merchant caravans. Its infamy earned it a sizable bounty, which was what these four were aiming to collect. The thrill of a double jackpot like this was too enticing, and even if their levels were still short of reaching 20, they had the strategy and teamwork necessary to take down the tougher opponent. There was strength in numbers, after all. The mimic, which was just kind of sitting there, hesitated as to what to do. The Janther had leaped out of range of its magical perception some time ago. It had no idea what was going on nearby, but it definitely knew something was happening. It could clearly hear the sounds of battle after all. So would it flee or stay put? After a while, it decided it needed to at least verify the situation before making any rash decisions. It sprouted an eye on its left side, taking extra care to disguise the eyelid with a layer of wood-textured skin. It knew for certain there was nobody within 10 meters of it, so it was confident the tiny abnormality on its surface would not be noticed. When it was ready, it timidly peeked at what was going on. It saw that indomitable Janther bleeding heavily from its front. One of its eyes had been wounded. Its chest and frontmost legs were covered in cuts and several arrows were stuck in its side. In truth, even if it appeared heavily injured, none of those wounds were particularly deep, let alone fatal. The eye was a bit of a problem, but it would grow back, given time. Therefore, at least for the time being, it could keep attacking as fiercely as possible. The giant cat-like creature swung its two left front paws at the black-haired warrior. The man blocked both of them with his kite shield, but was sent flying backwards from the impact. He fell a few meters away from it, coughing up blood from the heavy impact. The other warrior, a brown-haired and stocky man, took his place. The elven druid in the back then chanted,
"Rejuvenate!"
as she completed her spell. A soft green light engulfed the wounded black-haired man and began refilling his HP.
"Entangle!"
she continued. Green plants that looked like barbed roots burst from the ground. They coiled themselves around all four of the Janther's front limbs, pinning it in place. It struggled to break free, but that would take some time. Taking this opportunity, the ranger knocked an arrow. He concentrated for a brief moment and then let loose with a shout of,
"Multishot!"
The martial art activated splendidly. The single arrow multiplied into four the instant it was fired. The quartet of arrows struck the immobile Janther's right flank, causing it to yelp in pain. In the next instant, it finished breaking free of the roots and slammed into the brown-haired warrior in a fit of rage. It was a repeat of a little while ago, as one warrior was knocked back and the other intercepted the monster in his stead. This was a scene the mimic was familiar with. The ones in front would keep the enemy busy and block their advance. Then there would be that one person in the back who applied healing magic and disrupted the tougher opponent. And finally, there would be someone even further away attacking from a distance. The shape-shifting chest knew this formation well. It had faced it several times in the past. While it did prefer solo targets, the adventurers who explored dungeons completely alone were few in number. It often had to fight groups of two or three, sometimes four of them, so it knew firsthand just how effective that basic strategy was. Even those four it killed last night tried to do pretty much the same thing. If it didn't have the advantages of a higher level or the element of surprise, it would probably not be alive right now. The mimic did not know much, but it knew two things were certain. One, the Janther would probably lose. It couldn't land a telling blow on those well-armored people in the front, and that green-haired woman would not allow them to die from accumulated damage. The second thing was that the healer, in this case the druid, was the linchpin of this formation. These adventurers would either get wiped out or at the very least suffer casualties without her support. Objectively speaking, the mimic was really just a bystander in all this. It had no obligations to help either side and would be justified if it chose to stay completely out of this mess. While it was true that adventurers and monsters were fated to be enemies, it was also true that different species of monsters very rarely got along. This was a situation where the enemy of its enemy was still an enemy. So, in some ways, it didn't matter at all who would win. But that was not entirely true, was it? If the Janther won, it would simply go back to sleep or run off to hunt. If the adventurers won, they would want to open the mysterious chest that this formidable creature was guarding. And with its true nature inevitably revealed, the mimic would be dragged into a fight, at which point it would probably be killed. After all, a group capable of taking down that huge beast would surely not fall prey to something like an animate chest. The mimic began to weigh its options. Could it escape right now? Definitely. Neither of these two forces would be able to chase after it while they were busy with each other. So why not try to kill a few of those people first? At the very least, if it had to choose, it would want the Janther to win. True, it did piss all over the poor thing, but the mimic didn't particularly hate it. It was warm and sort of pleasant, actually. Of course, it might think differently if it had a sense of smell or if some of it got into its mouth. Having made its decision to interfere, it next needed to choose a method. Shadow Bolt was an option. What better place to test its power? It even had the perfect target, that druid in the middle. The mimic was in her blind spot and had a clear shot. Not to mention that, unlike the other three who constantly orbited around their target, the female elf had to stand perfectly still while chanting. Oh, right. Chanting. It would need to chant the Shadow Bolt spell out loud, possibly attracting attention to itself. Still, with all that commotion, it doubted it would be caught as long as it was quiet. It was still under the effects of its stealth skill, after all. That meant any sound, including its speech, would be lessened to some degree. Right. Now all that was left was to choose the right moment. The Janther was rapidly running out of HP and the adventurers were clearly getting tired, but the winner was pretty much obvious at this point. The climax of the battle would be here soon, and there might not be a good chance if it waited too long. And then, one of the warriors was blown back again. The druid would now undoubtedly focus on healing her teammate and would be a sitting duck. The chest lid lifted ever so slightly. A low gurgle-like sound could barely be heard as it charged its spell. When the druid started muttering an incantation of her own, the mimic released its spell with a whisper.
Shadowhout!
The massive darkness streaked through the air with a low hiss. The female druid had just finished preparing her next rejuvenation spell and was about to invoke it with the key word. She shouted,
Re!
But only got as far as the first syllable. The shadow bolt caught her completely off guard and made impact with the side of her skull. The sprawling shadow engulfed her head in an instant. The eldritch energies then viciously pulled her flesh and bones apart. There was a horrible sloshing sound as her head burst open like a gory firework. Drops of blood, bits of brain, clumps of hair, shards of bone, and patches of skin rained down on her comrades. The suddenly headless body stood upright for an impossibly long second before falling over with a wet thud. Assassination skill triggered. Your attack has dealt 200% more damage. Target HP, -126. You have slain your target in a single strike. Assassination proficiency increased. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Arcane Assassin. Level up. Level up. Level up. Level up. Congratulations. You are now a level 5 warlock. Intelligence +10. Mental fortitude +10. Endurance +10. You have learned a new spell. Ebon Fire. You have learned a new spell. Mass Panic. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Monster Magic. Proficiency level increased. Ruin Mastery is now level 2. Intelligence +4. Wisdom +2. Endurance +2. Chapter 3. The Sweeper. Part 1. Lelandros never wanted much out of life. Just to become really famous and get all the ladies. A simple, straightforward dream. But as an elf born in the human-dominated Lodrak Empire, his prospects were bleak. Practically non-existent, actually. He was so low on the social ladder that even the worms in the dirt seemed to be above him in the pecking order. All because of some big war over 300 years ago that people were still salty about. Well, it didn't help that the elves used horrific and underhanded means to fight that war. They were basically terrorists. And then they lost. Even if it was a long time ago, those random attacks on uninvolved civilians caused some pretty deep scars. It was to the point where there wasn't a single human in the Empire who hadn't suffered at their hands. So the humans despised the elves. They taught their children to hate them, and those children passed that on. It had gotten a bit better for the elves with time, but the discrimination was still pretty widespread. At least they weren't chained and enslaved on sight anymore, so there's definitely progress, right? And then you have this young elven street urchin who wanted to make it big. What was he supposed to do? Join an adventurer's guild, of course. Unlike the general populace, most adventurers did not discriminate against elves. Or at least, not openly. As a result, many elves were forced to take up the dangerous work of an adventurer. At least 25% of adventurers were elves, second only to humans who made up about 40% of the total. Dwarves came in third with a share of about 15%. Those short and bearded humanoids weren't discriminated against, though. It was just that most of them preferred to become artisans and artists, a much better use of their dexterous fingers and deeper reserves of stamina. Also, their short legs made traveling long distances on foot a pain in the ass. And so, Lelandros became an adventurer. That was about a month ago. He was steadily climbing up to becoming a level 20 ranger along with his team. They were all former street rats like him, so they shared a certain bond beyond mere colleagues. Since their moralities and values lined up, they became fast friends and their teamwork was top-notch. Something like taking down a Janther was not a big deal. They had already killed one of the beasts a week ago. Admittedly, it was a younger one at only level 24, but the method to fight it did not change. They made a decent amount of money from that kill, and then they noticed there was a tempting bounty on this particular Janther worth 500 gold pieces, or GP. So it was only natural they would go for it. Admittedly, the traps he placed proved to be useless. It seemed that, unlike the younger one, this adult would not recklessly chase them down. Still, that just meant the hunt would take longer. They still considered this a low-risk, high-reward job. The risk seemed to disappear as they verified the Janther was weaker than they expected. It was practically already dead, and Rayla still had a decent amount of MP left. So then, why did her head have to suddenly explode just now? Lelandros was this close to getting inside her pants, too. Such a shame. He would have to find someone else to help him graduate from being a virgin by the look of things. But before that, he had one important matter to take care of. He had to throw up. He keeled over and went, as the contents of his stomach came out the wrong end. It wasn't like the poor lad could help it. He was still young and inexperienced. He was also right next to Rayla when he saw her head suddenly enveloped in a black mist. He opened his mouth to scream, but in the next instant that pretty face had turned into soup. And then he got a mouthful of bloodied brain tissue. He also briefly felt the presence of someone else's tooth on his tongue. So he threw up. He vomited uncontrollably because his heart was gripped by a combination of fear, panic, disgust, and general what-the-fuckery. Brom and Crom didn't seem to realize what had just happened. The horrifying noise of their comrade's head bursting into a red mist was drowned out by the Janther's roars. But even if the sound reached them, it was unlikely they would hear it. Those muscle-headed sworn brothers were so focused on their target that they didn't notice anything else. But Lelandros did. How could he not? He saw that sinister spell flying at Rayla, but he couldn't stop it. He didn't know who launched it, but he saw the direction. And so, while his comrades were in the middle of trading blows with an enemy they were highly unlikely to defeat, he looked aside. And then he saw it. A mass of wood, teeth, and hatred. It was skittering quickly across the grassy ground on black, spider-like legs. It lowered its profile and circled around to the Janther's back, using the six-legged beast's body as a shield. Crom and Brom had yet to notice it. This was bad. He didn't know why or how, but that spider chest was definitely the culprit that murdered the girl he liked. He couldn't let it get away with that. He wouldn't allow that monster to do as it pleased. This time would be different. This time, he would do his job as the eyes and ears of this team and warn them of danger. He opened his mouth and vomited furiously in their direction. He couldn't even scream properly. All that was heard was the wet splatter of disgusting bits of partially digested meat against the grass. It wasn't like he was quite over what had happened seconds ago. But he tried again. He lifted his gaze to try to warn his surviving comrades. But it was a mistake. What he saw next would undoubtedly give him nightmares for the rest of his life. Part 2. The Mimic had made a decision. It would interfere in this fight and test out its new Shadow Bolt spell in the process. The one-hit KO against the Druid was unexpected, however. It had no idea assassination worked with spells, either. If it did, it would have aimed for somewhere else. After all, without the brain, it couldn't absorb that corpse. Well, it was still going to eat it, though. Truthfully, it was feeling rather hungry. Its HP and MP recovery weren't halved due to starvation, but that moment felt like it would come soon. It had other things to do before chowing down, though. First, it needed to finish the fight. And it would do so by killing off the Janther and then moving on to the heavily wounded and tired adventurers. Truly a lose-lose-win scenario that suited it perfectly. It crept around the Janther's back while under the guise of stealth. It noticed one of the adventurers was watching it, but couldn't do anything about that. The stealth skill only affected sound, so walking around in plain sight like that was bound to get it discovered. It didn't matter, though, as long as its target was unaware. Once it got into position, the Mimic took out a single sword and gripped it tightly with its tongue. Its sudden burst of intelligence and wisdom seemed to make it realize the Janther had an obvious weak spot that was perfect for assassination. It was a specific organ that was also present on the humans and elves it had already eaten. And its recent tussle with the quintet of guards back in that cave demonstrated that it was undoubtedly a weakness. So, After taking some precautions and matching its timing with the still-fighting Janther, it brandished its sword and stabbed at it from behind. Using its magic perception and dexterous tongue, it precisely pierced both of the Janther's testicles. Assassination skill triggered. Your attack has dealt 200% more damage. Target HP minus 54. The damage dealt was low. That much was expected. It wasn't like something that was outside the body was a vital spot. Well, it may have been necessary to the Janther to qualify as a mammal, but the beast had other things on its mind right now. Like a searing, indescribably intense pain. It still had 105 HP remaining, but the agony it was in made it almost want to die. It yelled with a long, high-pitched scream as it fell on the ground. Crom and Brom stepped back at this weird behavior. Since it didn't look like the writhing and yelling Janther would get up any time soon, they could finally catch their breath. But something was off. Where was their damned support? They looked over their shoulders in unison to admonish their teammates for slacking. It was only then that they realized something horrible had happened. Their ranger was vomiting, and their druid was lying on the ground, covered in blood. And then the Janther screamed again. Crom and Brom turned their focus back to their target. If they turned their backs on it now, it was sure to kill them both. And then, they also saw it. A wooden chest that was latched firmly on the Janther's back. The mimic had climbed up on the now grounded prey and driven its teeth deep into it. It stuck to it like a tick. Even if the Janther thrashed around, it wouldn't be able to shake it off. The mimic then put the next step of its attack into action. Its six spider legs fused together to become two slightly disfigured black arms. It was its first time growing human limbs, but it had no problems with that. It had eaten so many arms that it could probably create one in its sleep. It wasn't like the arachnid limbs that had to be made from sight, or the eye, which was a delicate thing. Simple muscle and bone could be easily grown in an instant. The arms reached into the small opening between the monster's jaws and the Janther's bloodied hide and pulled out a sword each. They then began viciously stabbing every bit of Janther flesh within reach. The shapeshifter couldn't put as much power into them as it wanted, but it had all the time in the world. It kept stabbing and carving up the green fur, splattering blood all over the place. The duo of warriors felt like they had walked into a nightmare. Their elven comrade, further back, felt like he was already in hell. Even by monster standards, that horrible wooden box was simply way too vicious, entirely too brutal. It was as though it went out of its way to pick the most horrible method of ripping apart its victims. Once the Janther finally stopped struggling and passed away, the mimic morphed again. In an instant, it turned back into a spider chest, but this time it had all three of its tongue tentacles out and ready. Without giving the dumbfounded men any time to relax, it charged at them, swinging its blades around in a flurry of death and blood. Crom and Brom were natural-born warriors. They were confident in their ability to block and parry a wide range of attacks. Whether they came from monsters, bandits, or even other adventurers didn't matter. They would deflect them all and hold the line. However, they could not keep up with this onslaught. The sheer number of blows raining down on them meant they had no breathing room. Exhausted and disheartened, they desperately tried to hold the monster back while getting covered in scratches. But they still had faith. Faith that, if given enough time, that elf would be able to do something about this nightmarish creature. They believed that from the bottom of their hearts. But such a thing did not happen. Lelandros was already running away with all his might. His elven nature screamed at him to save himself. His experience growing up in the gutter told him to run for his life, and his fear-addled mind had absolutely no desire to stick around. And so, he ran. Comrades, lovers, friends, you can buy plenty of those if you had money. But you couldn't have any of that if you died in a forest somewhere. Besides, he had a duty. He had to report the appearance of that terrifying monster to the authorities. The proper subjugation quest needed to be put out, and stronger adventurers had to be called in from the south. Dying there would be a disservice to his comrades who were still fighting to buy him time to escape. At least, that was what he told himself. Back at that blood-soaked battlefield, Crom and Brom were both inevitably slain. They fought valiantly, but they were in a hopeless position. Wounded, tired, and abandoned, they died to a monster's blade slowly, painfully, and gripped by despair. Their passing was so dreadful that it was highly likely they would come back as the undead if their killer wasn't planning on absorbing their corpses. The mimic danced on their bloodied bodies. Its hastily made plan resulted in a massive harvest. Since someone else had already heavily wounded the Janther before this opportunist showed up and stole the kill, it only got partial credit. Still, that, combined with the other two kills it got, was enough to earn it 3 levels for its mimic job. The pointy-eared one got away, which was a bit of a shame, but all things considered, this was a very profitable engagement. After it had settled down, it went over to the non-viable corpse and began eating the dead woman. While it was doing that, it also went through its status. It had earned a lot of things it didn't have time to double-check before, so now was a good time to verify. And just like the spell list, that new thing it saw should have its own screen. It still had no idea what exactly a perk was, though. Perk list. Arcane Assassin. Monster Magic. Perk. A special effect that had been made available by fulfilling specific conditions. You can inspect individual perks for more information. Arcane Assassin. Every assassin worth their salt knows that silence is golden. Requirements? Kill an opponent of equal or higher level with a single spell while the stealth skill is active. Effects. Spells cast while the stealth skill is active will be completely silent. Spells cast while the stealth skill is active will cost 25% more MP. Monster Magic. A being born of mana is naturally more skilled at manipulating it. Requirements? Obtain any level 5 caster job as a monster. Effects. All spells are 5% more effective. So, perks were similar to skills, except they wouldn't grow stronger with time. Obtaining them seemed to be mostly at random, too. How was anyone supposed to figure it out outside of blind luck? The mimic complained slightly to nobody in particular. Well, not like it had a firm grasp on how to unlock general skills either. Truthfully, adventurers could share this information and help each other become that slight bit stronger. They were all essentially competitors, so they only revealed such things to those they trusted. And nobody was about to trust a monster that was currently busy eating the corpse of a person it murdered in cold blood. Next, the mimic needed to verify its new magic. Ebonfire. Requirements. Level 3 Warlock. Intelligence, 20. School, Ruin. Type, Targeted. Cost, 100 MP. Range, 25 meters. Effects. Engulfs your target's soul in flames, burning away their body over 6 seconds. Has no effect on undead, demons, and golems. Mass Panic. Requirements, level 5 Warlock, intelligence 15, mental fortitude 15. School, domination. Type, area effect. Cost, 50 MP. Range, 5 meters. Effects, sends all living things in the immediate area into a magically induced panic attack. Has no effect on undead, demons, and golems. Ebonfire seemed to be like a powerful spell, but with limited usage and 100 MP also seemed like a really steep cost. On the upside, it looked like it left the actual body in one piece, which was good. The mimic didn't want to invalidate any more corpses if it could help it. As for mass panic, it seemed to be of limited use. It was also of a school of magic different to ruin. Domination. A school of magic that focuses on influencing the mind. Domination spells do not deal physical damage and instead cause debilitating conditions. Domination spells will display stronger or weaker effects depending on the difference between the mental attributes of the caster and the target. Repeated use of domination spells against the same target will show reduced effectiveness. So it was something that seemed completely unreliable, at least for hunting. This was the simple truth the mimic's noticeably boosted mental abilities realized. Still, the incantation was really short, so it might be useful as an escape mechanism. Having finished devouring the druid, the mimic moved onto the Janther's corpse. While it would definitely use cadaver absorption on it, the monster first needed to rectify a problem. It couldn't see in the dark. but this six-legged beast could clearly see it last night. Therefore, the mimic wanted those eyes. It had to eat them to copy them properly. Technically, eating a part of the corpse now would reduce the effectiveness of cadaver absorption, but some things were more important than attributes or skills. And even then, it was only going after that one tiny part of its face. Compared to the rest of the gigantic body, they were so insignificant that it probably wouldn't make a difference anyway. So the shapeshifter gouged them out slowly with a sword and then put them in its mouth. It rolled them around on its tongue before slowly chewing them up and swallowing them. The sole human eye on its surface then morphed. Its color changed from a dull brown to a bright yellow. A vertical line ran down the golden iris, giving it the appearance of a cat eye. The mimic would need to wait until it got dark again to properly calibrate it, but it was a start. Since it had enough MP, it absorbed the entirety of the Janther. What appeared to be thousands of liters of gray sludge disappeared inside its body, leaving behind a pile of skin and bones that crumbled away slowly in the gentle breeze. Unfortunately, it was a failure and nothing was gained. The mimic immediately felt a pang of regret. Hundreds of kilograms of delicious fresh meat just went to waste. It might actually mourn for it, if it knew the concept of grief. Still, it had two more usable corpses it could absorb, so it might get lucky anyway. But that would need to wait until its MP recovered some more. Right now, it had one more important piece of business with its status screen.
"Skill list! Harlock!"
it chanted. The screen came up as expected, but it seemed it only had one skill on offer. This was because, simply put, it was missing supporting general skills. For example, if it had the taboo skill, it might unlock Hexcraft. But as it stood, it had to make do with what it got. Summon Familiar. The warlock can call forth demons from the beyond and bend them to his will. Requirements: Level 5 Warlock, Intelligence 30. Type: Active. Activation time, 10 seconds. Cost, 50% of max MP. Range, 15 meters. Effects: summons a contracted demon to serve as the warlock's familiar and obey his orders. A summoned familiar will last until it dies or the warlock dismisses it. The familiar's strength is dependent on the level of this skill and the MP used to summon it. Allows the creation of one demonic contract. Beware. Demons do not like to be shackled. Having some company would be good. Not that the mimic was getting lonely or anything. It just understood the concept of strength in numbers. And if that didn't work, it would at least find out if demons tasted good. General information. You may skip to the next chapter. Mimic, lesser. Genderless, 2 months old. Level 18 mimic. Level 5 warlock. 178 out of 376 HP, plus 0.6 per second, 35 out of 305 MP, plus 0.4 per second. Attributes: strength, 51, dexterity, 56, agility, 45, endurance, 65, intelligence, 61, wisdom, 49, luck, 12, mental fortitude, 24. Mimic skills: assassination, level 4. Storage, level 3. Cadaver absorption, level 2. Warlock skills: summon familiar, level 1. Other skills: shapeshift, level 4. Stealth, level 3. Sword mastery, level 5. Ruin mastery, level 2. Part 3. Lelandros never wanted much out of life. Just to become really famous and get all the ladies. A simple, straightforward dream. But that was then, and this was now. Thoughts of fame and fortune were so far removed from his consciousness that he questioned if he really had them in the first place.
"Oi, Twiggy,"
came a voice from outside his cell.
"Captain will see you now."
Landros meekly got up from the pile of hay that served as his bed for the night. Not like he could fall asleep anyway. His night terrors wouldn't let him. The horrifying scenery of that girl he sort of liked exploding all over him was still fresh in his mind. He remembered it vividly like it was yesterday. although that's not really surprising considering that's precisely when that happened. He ambled over to the iron bars that made up his cell door and put his hands through a gap in the vertical bars. The guard on the other side cuffed the elf's wrists with solid iron shackles connected by a short, thick chain. Lelandros pulled his wrists back inside so that the guard could unlock and open the cell. He roughly grabbed the shackled